So, guys, hello and welcome to the We Are the Girls in Claret and Blue podcast. So, over the last week, a lot of things have changed. However, we are still trying to get a lot of content out. Today, we're joined by our special guest who just thankfully came on. Dan, welcome to the show, Dan.
Yep, hey, Reese, how are you doing?
Dan, first of all, you run a publication. So give us an insight of how the suspension of the FA Women's Super League and suspensions with the coronavirus have affected you so far, mate.
Yeah, we made the decision on Friday after the suspension was announced to halt production of the magazine. Obviously, we don't know what the postal service is going to be like. We don't know what news is going to be available. It's tough. We don't know how long players are going to be in quarantine for, which players are going to be fit, which players are going to be healthy, when the league's going to start again. So, yeah, I think what we didn't want to do from our point of view is we could have probably produced a magazine for April, May, June. I'm sure we would have filled it, but with no games, it takes away the quality for what the people are paying for. And with that as well, not having matches to sell magazines at, it produces a little bit of a risk for us. So what we did is we contacted all of our usual customers and just advised them that that we were halting production for the time being, and you know, we've had the feedback that it was the right decision. FA Women's Super League full time certainly isn't closed. We're looking to get out 2 to 3 pieces on our website each day. The feedback's been very good. We haven't seen any impact at all on our viewing numbers, which is really, really good.
Dan, I don't know about you, but me and Ali decided on Friday, I think it was as well, that we are going to suspend until hopefully the 30th of March, even though, to be honest, we do expect it to be longer. Our She Believes final episode and our FAWSL podcasts. I don't know about you, but for us now, the reason we suspended it was because we need to keep the topics that we have to speak about for longevity now. I don't know if that's affected you in any way so far, mate.
I think we've just got to take a different approach. I think, you know, people in the media, in the women's game, are going to have to work harder. And I think we all know that. We know that the content's not there. We know that some of the... obviously, there's no games. There's not a lot of news coming out the clubs at the minute. We don't want it to be a case of, oh, this player's got coronavirus, this player's healthy, and so on and so on. You know what? It's a fantastic community, the women's footballing community. And I think we've all got a duty to keep it going, to keep talking to one another, to keep talking football, because there's a lot of dark times ahead away from football. So, you know, from our point of view, yes, our content's probably going to be a little bit different and we are going to be scraping the barrel sometimes. But you know what? From our point of view, we're going to carry on, and we're going to carry on for as long as we possibly can. As I say, I think every day so far we've published 2-3 different articles on our website. They're probably a little bit different to what our readers usually see. We've got to survive this, and we've got to kind of, we've just got to work harder to make sure that we get the right content out, for however long this suspension goes on for.
I'd actually like to echo that, Dan. The response that me and Ali have had with the podcast and getting content out, thank you to you, Dan. You've been really helpful speaking about potential podcasts, potential topics with us, and I shared today our sort of 3-point plan of what we're going to do with the podcast in certain stages when this develops. Also, I know Emma today also accepted Ali's invitation to come on to discuss a topic that'll be out next week. So thanks, Dan, for being so helpful, mate.
Yeah, no problem. But as I say, I think, you know, it feels like we've got a duty to it. You know, we follow it so much throughout the season. We work so hard throughout the season. When it's not there, you just can't give up. And there's a lot of people who, you know, you've got to think of all these people who potentially could be locked down at home in the future weeks. They might have to work from home, so they don't get that interaction with the people which they usually get at work. You don't see the people who you go at the football to see. By carrying on as we have done, it just keeps some sanity in the world at the minute, which is, you know, very much a frantic world, I would say, and one of full of worry.
I think as well, Dan, as you said, it is our duty of every media outlet covering women's football now to not only the players that perform when they can every week, but also to our listeners or your readers, for example, Dan, because if people are in lockdown, either right now or a week or two, we have a duty to provide them to go, okay, I'm in lockdown, let's go and either read an FAWSL full-time article or a We Are The Girls In Claret And Blue podcast.
Absolutely. I think, as I say, I suffer with a little bit of anxiety. So, you know, sometimes these kind of frantic situations play on your mind a little bit more than what it does with other people. And, I've just noticed in the last 3 or 4 days, you know, you sit there and you put the TV on and everything's coronavirus and everything's what's going to happen now. And, you know, these are the steps which you're going to have to take. We're going to have to isolate you from your families and, you know, the older generation, and it goes on and on and on and on. I think it gets to the point, and I read a fantastic article on BBC. I can't remember who written the piece now, about, you know, what people have got to turn off a little bit now and again, and, you know, they've got to get some normality back into their life. And, you know, I think carrying on what we've already created in the women's game is key to that.
I think what you just said, Dan, with anxiety, on my personal reflection, I have an anger problem that stems from a younger age. So for me, if I'm sitting down for too long or something's been taken away from me, I can get really angry really quickly, and it does affect my mental state. So it is important as well that people keep, not only, you know, we've heard it so many times, the hygiene clean, but also their mental health, and they look after that, because as we've seen with something like mental health, something can escalate really quickly, Dan.
Yeah, I think, and I think that could be as well with the players an awful lot, because you've got the players are going into a period here of where there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, obviously the training patterns and their day-to-day life is going to be severely disrupted. I think I'd read recently that I think Bristol City have banned training, or they've given the players time to go and train alone, which is obviously going to be quite lonely for them. I think Leicester City have done similar in the Championship. This is a whole new experience for the players. And, you know, there's also the thought about things like contracts. We don't know how long this suspension is going to go on for. If it goes on beyond June, you could have players who are out of contract. And, you know, what's going to happen to those players? I think I'd read today about operations and, you know, the fact that the NHS were going to prioritise certain operations. And, you know, I know that certainly some of the players in the Championship have had to kind of wait for operations on things like ACL injuries, just during the last 12 months. Some players as long as maybe 6 to 9 months. I think it's good that we're kind of keeping the women's game and, you know, the media world alive. And I think the players need to see that normality as well as the fans.
Okay, then. So let's get on with while me and Dan are here today. So something you'll see from the We Are The Girls In Claret And Blue for quite a few weeks now is topic of the week. So we will pick a topic that either I will host or Ali will host in the coming weeks, and we'll discuss it with a guest. So tonight, as everybody would have guessed by now that would have listened to us for the 10 minutes, I'm joined by Dan, and we're going to discuss what UEFA should do with the Women's Euro 2021. Now, this debate comes after, on Tuesday, the Men's Euros announced that it would be delayed by a year. So, Dan, this is something that's been debated quite a bit today on Twitter, actually. What would you do if you was in UEFA's position? Would you delay it to 2022, or would you match the 2021 date but play after the final of the men's competition?
Yeah, there's 2 points on this. The first thing is that they've made the decision to move back the men's 2020. To announce a date for me is a little bit risky because the tournament's played over several countries. How do you know that all of those countries are fully recovered from coronavirus and ready to host a major tournament on the date they've stated next summer? I think that's a risky move from UEFA. I think really they probably should have just said that the tournament was suspended and, you know, maybe come the autumn when we've got a better idea. I think it would have been a more sensible decision for them then to provide us with dates and, you know, what we expect going forward. So that's, you know, that's a the primary concern, if you like. There's then the question as to what will happen with the Women's Euro 2021. You know, I know we were speaking off air before that there's a lot of preparation goes into a tournament for those clubs which qualify. And it's everything from, you know, whose training ground they're going to use during the tournament, which hotels they're going to stay at, how they're going to prepare for matches, how they're going to wind down, where they're going to have to travel to. There's an awful lot to go into that and an awful lot of planning. And we've got to bear in mind that a lot of the qualifying matches, which are scheduled within probably the next 2 or 3 month period, are probably going to be postponed due to coronavirus. So, you know, if those are rescheduled later in the year, the current date for the 2021 next summer is probably not going to be ideal for anybody. I think from my point of view, I would get them to suspend it and let's just give it a few months and take a bit of calm as to when we're going to rearrange the tournament.
See, I agree with you, Dan, about suspending the Women's Euros 2021, because not to be too doom and gloom about this, but there's nothing right now that confirms that we as a country are going to be ready to host a major tournament by that date in 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's been mentioned today about suppression and a suppression period of about 18 months. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult because we don't know when Britain's going to be ready again. We don't know when Britain's going to be a recovered nation, a healthy nation, one which isn't at risk of this virus. So yeah, this is it's not a good time really to be thinking about when we're going to plan in the Euros. You know, I don't think you can schedule football at the minute. I really don't. You know, we don't know domestically when the Women's Super League and the Women's Championship is going to recommence. We've both discussed, we think it's going to be next season because you've got to think of the fact that we're talking about potential lockdown, we're talking about isolation for at least part of the population for 12 weeks, which is going to take us to the end of June. By the time the players come back and get back in training, you're talking a new season, and we've already kind of discussed What are we going to do with the Women's Super League? Are we going to carry it on through next season? Are we going to have a stopgap in there somewhere? Are we going to cancel the league? Nobody seems to know. But, I mean, as well across the continent, if you've got teams looking for Euro 2021, nobody really knows when their domestic competitions are going to recommence and what the schedule is for that.
See, now, with the FA Women's Super League, then I think we should... The FA should really go and make a statement and just say, look, we're probably going to have to suspend it until the end of the season, come April the 4th, so we're going to do that now. Because for me, I'm just things that I've been reading and hearing on the news, Dan, I just can't see us continuing the season in any circumstances right now.
Yeah, it won't take place between now and June. I think we all know, you know, looking at what the country's preparing itself for, the Women's Super League and the entire footballing calendar in this country isn't going to recommence this season. I think we're all coming round to the fact that that's probably how it's going to turn out. The question then goes into, you know, what are we going to do with the league? Are we going to continue it next season? Are we going to cancel it? Which would then cause a lot of problems in terms of the promotion and relegation situation. There's already talk of clubs in the men's game kind of thinking about potentially putting together potential legal action against the Football Association, against the Football League, if certain decisions are made which don't favour them. I mean, the other thing is that some clubs in the women's game are going to go without money for a number of months. What kind of financial state are they going to be in to be able to continue the season? I think the only thing we can say at the minute is that the season will not finish this season. What happens after that? We've obviously had the ban at FC thing today, which might have a little bit of a knock-on effect with London Bees. Will London Bees be able to start next season or recommence the current campaign at a later date? You look at little clubs like Durham who survive on pretty decent crowds, but you know the community's been taken away, the crowds, the matches, the income's been taken away for, you know, 3 months, and they're going to have to try to survive. The Premier League affiliated clubs should be okay. We can't even say which clubs are going to be in a position or how many clubs to recommence the season whenever that is.
Dan, on the topic of what they're going to do with promotion and relegation, do you not think, though, there is more of an opportunity with the Women's Super League to maybe add another the two teams that are in the top two in there to make it a 14-team league? So I think it would be better for the women's game in terms of, I think I read an article last week that they were trying to sell the TV rights next season. Now, adding another two teams could boost that revenue because you're advertising to the broadcaster that's going to buy the rights to that more games of Women's Super League football.
Yeah, I mean, the argument is that there's two teams ready to come up. And for me, Aston and Sheffield United, with all due respect to the other clubs in that league, are ready for Super League football. Sheffield United might need to bring on one or two extra players, full-time players. But those two clubs are ready to compete at that level, you know, is my feeling on this. There are other good clubs in the Championship. I see Leicester being a force in future seasons with their young players. Durham are always there or thereabouts. And there'll be some more clubs who I'm sure will invest over the coming years. But there are two clubs who could, you know, their performances are visibly, consistent week after week. And they'd be okay in the Super League, I think. The problem you've got is that in the current scenario, to change rules mid-season isn't really quite right, in my opinion. You can't kind of set your stall out and then move the goalposts when the problem arises. It's unfortunate, but you know this is a huge problem as to how we resolve this. My opinion is that you play out the rest of the season before Christmas, and then you have a new, like we did in 2017 with the spring series. You'd have a spring series from January to June, where every club plays each side once. And then your calendar is back in sync for the following season.
If I was head of women's football in the FA, though, Dan, right now, I would make it my job to have steps in place to make sure that by whatever decision I make by the end of this virus, I've tried everything possible to get the last season concluded and the new one started, with not only protecting the fans from this virus, but also protecting the players and their fitness. Because if you don't give them enough break between the end of this season, if it continues, and the start of the new season, there could be more injuries.
And we've got that ACL argument, which has come up all season long, hasn't it? There's been so many ACL injuries, which are ruling players out for 6 to 9 months. As I say, as I mentioned earlier, in the Championship at some clubs where they don't have that quick access to a surgeon, they're going on a waiting list for several months before the problem's getting corrected as well. So, you know, they could be losing well over a year by the time they're back to full fitness again. I do feel that give it another week, 2 weeks, I think the players will, I mean, obviously we don't know where we all stand in terms of lockdown and working from home. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation and a lot of, you know, this could be real, you know, in terms of the feeling over the next few days. But whatever happens, I get the feeling that clubs are about to shut up for summer. I think another couple of weeks and training will be, you know, cancelled indefinitely, and players will come back for the new season.
Dan, on Women's Euro 2021, if it does, let's hope it doesn't, but if it does get to the point where come June or July next year, this country isn't ready to host the Euros, would there be a point that they just cancel the tournament as a whole and wait for the next Euros that's scheduled? Or do you think you have to try your best to play this one first?
I think we've got to try and play it. The question is when. So for me, I think you've got to plan things so carefully. I don't think you jump the gun and you say, right, it's going to be held the next date. I think give it some time before and some thought about what state the country is going to be in, and we over the problem before we start thinking about when we're going to host it. One thing which I don't think will come into it is whether England is going to be less fit than other nations to host it and it might get moved. I don't think that'll ever come into the equation because, you know, I think every country's got a coronavirus problem at the moment. But, you know, I think UEFA's jumped the gun today. I really do, with the 2020 men's edition being moved to a set date next year. I think they should have just suspended it and wait to see, particularly because there's so many countries involved.
Yeah.
That tournament in terms of hosting games, I think you know that. I think there was an article as well about the, you know, the planning for UEFA competitions to hopefully recommence and be completed by the 30th of June this year. I think, you know, I think they're setting themselves up for a fall. Why do that in the situation that we're in, knowing that there's a lot of countries, not just England, which aren't going to be ready to host football for quite a while?
Well, that date you've just said, Dan, by what the government's been saying, is when the people hit. So I don't think any country is going to be ready, not only us. And with UEFA competitions, they've also got to consider not only will countries be ready to play and host these competitions, but will countries be able to travel to each other? Because by June, I just can't see it, that not only are the countries fit and ready to go again to host major events, but they're able to travel between each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, we've all got some holidays booked, but how many of us actually believe that we're going to be going on them? I've written mine off already. I haven't claimed a refund.
That would be less than 1%, Dan.
Yeah. Nobody's moving anywhere. If anything, more borders are being shut. I don't think there's any way with a comment like that from UEFA that can possibly happen, and how you can even think about that. I think UEFA and probably the Premier League as well, and I'd imagine the FA Women's Super League, probably very nervous about where their current competitions stand at the minute and how they're going to get those completed. I think there's, you know, I mean, you look at the Liverpool situation and people are kind of saying, well, you know, will Liverpool being Liverpool, will Liverpool women get any kind of favourable treatment with them being at the bottom of the league at the moment. The Women's Super League want to lose a club like Liverpool. There's pressure on the FA Women's Super League, the FA, to make the correct decision. And in fairness, really, that should be for the league to continue. But, you know, we know there's huge boundaries which we're going to have to get beyond, both in the UK and across the world, before we're in a position to be able to host football matches in front of, you know, decent attendances again.
Do you think, Dan, whatever the FA deem to do, do you think things will get political either way when looking at it from an FA perspective?
Put it this way, well, knowing the FA, knowing the way people react to the FA will never do anything right. That's nothing wrong with the FA, but whatever decision they make, they're always going to hide into nothing. It's the way they're perceived. It's the way that people react to decisions. You know, we react to decisions, but from the government, and the government will never be right. We're always in the right with our own opinions. The FA do what the FA do. It is going to be difficult because I think the government will get some criticism for it. I think if you've got footballers out of work, if you've got clubs finding it really difficult financially to survive, I think the government will be in for a lot of criticism, particularly if some of the bailouts don't go through to save, don't filter down to the clubs who are struggling. But yeah, the competition, the decision which the FA make is going to be a huge one as far as the recommencement of the competition goes, because it's going to have to be done fairly. And you'd think that to do it fairly, the only way you can do it is by recommencing the competition.
Yeah.
I mean, one example for me where the stall was well and truly set out was the Women's FA Cup. I think it was the fourth round? You had that game where Crystal Palace went to Southampton Women, and I think they were 3-0 up after 78 minutes and the game was called off. And, you know, surely Palace go through, and they made them replay the game from the start, in fairness, because the tie hadn't been won. Palace were winning, but in the eyes of the Football Association, that tie had not been completed. Southampton could have scored 3 goals in the last 12 minutes and took it to extra time. Hugely, hugely, hugely unlikely. But in the interest of fairness, that tie had to be replayed. And in you know, if you translate that into the FA Women's Super League, in all fairness, all games should be completed. We should know who has that right to survival and who will go down, who will get the UEFA Champions League spots, who will lift the title. You know, this is all to be decided.
Dan, looking at it from every aspect now, in terms of media outlets, the FA and the government, what do you think the end goal for all of them should be by the end of it? For me, I think as long as not only as a women's football community, but as a whole country, we come together and we make decisions that are right to benefit everybody, I think that would make us tackling the coronavirus a success, if we all come together, help each other out and reduce the chances.
Absolutely, but, you know, and you know, I've maybe had a bit of criticism on this. In terms of the coronavirus, you've got to look at the full picture for me. We all have our own duty to protect the people who are vulnerable, to make sure that they don't come into contact with any potential risks. You know, if they're at risk of contracting the virus, then, you know, they should, you know, stay away. You know, if you're a family member and you're ill, stay at home. We all have that duty to protect them. But on the other side of the coin, really, my concerns here is, you know, when you're asking businesses to close, when, if we put it to our football clubs, you know, in those terms, when they're not going to have any income for 3 months, what is going to happen? And, you know, I worry about the finances of the clubs. I worry about employment. I worry about poverty. I worry about some of our players potentially being homeless on the streets, having to use food banks. You know, there could be an awful lot more problems for us to face than just the coronavirus if it isn't managed properly. You know, 3 or 4 months is a long time to fight any kind of battle. But yeah, I think of the anxiety, the mental health. We've already said about the players, how different it must feel in those environments at the minute, where some of them are isolated, where they're training and they don't know when they're going to get that feeling of being able to do their job properly again, as it should be, as a normal routine. Yeah, there's so many, and you know, mental health, anxiety, lack of finance, you know, I think are every bit as dangerous at the minute as the coronavirus itself.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Dan. And I think the real test for not only the government but also for the FA is when businesses and clubs do, or if they go bust, how are they going to tackle that to support them, and maybe, if not revamp them, at least support the players that have played for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look, I mean, I don't know the insides and outs of every club's finances, but you look at some of these championship clubs and they do so well. They do so well to connect with the community. They do so well to develop young players. Some of them do well to survive with quite little support. They can't beat an awful lot of money in some of those clubs' bank accounts. Looking at the attendances which they get, they must just about break even. As I say, the clubs who have the backing of the professional men's sides are probably a lot more solid, and you know, they'll get through it. But you know, you look at clubs like Coventry, you look at clubs like Durham, London Bees, even Lewis. You look at those clubs, and they just do well to survive. But when you've got no income for 3 months, what do you do? And yeah, I think clubs like that, I think the FA have a huge duty to make sure that they survive, you know, and they get over this difficult period. And at the end of the day, they have 23 clubs who are ready to compete in the Women's Super League and the Women's Championship when it resumes, whenever that is.
Well, the thing is as well, Dan, with clubs' finances, if they do choose to resume the season in terms of sponsorships, they're still under contract, or they're still under an agreement that their sponsors are with them until the end of the 19-20 season. So where normally clubs may get their boost in June or July from sponsorships for 2020 to 2021, they wouldn't be able to do that because of the continuation of season 2019-20, and how will the FA then support them with that?
Yeah, that's another thing. It's income streams again. And you've got to think that even if you were appealing for new sponsors, the last thing that anybody is probably wanting to do at the minute is invest any money in anything. You know, all of these sponsors out there will be losing money at the minute. You know, you think of, I don't know, I don't want to use it as an example, but you think of the gambling firms, for example. I don't like the gambling firms getting involved in football. I don't agree with it. So in no way am I trying to promote that. But you think of the money that they've ploughed into the game, in terms of, if you just think of them barely as a sponsor of a competition or of a club. You know, if there's no football, so if they've effectively got a reduced pool of customers, their profits are going to be down. And you can say that about any business. You know, if we're in lockdown and we're not spending money, businesses are going to struggle. And with that, the first thing they're probably going to cut is where they invest money elsewhere outside of the business. And, you know, sponsorship is going to be very, very difficult to attract when we start again, regardless of what deals clubs have got until the end of this season.
And as well, Dan, it's not only with the clubs. I mean, me, and to be honest, for me with this podcast, I was feeling like after the first two She Believes, today I looked up the numbers and we've broke another record in terms of listeners, and we thought we was going nice and steadily towards sponsorship for 2020 to 2021, and now with this, because you're not sure of the continuation of the 19 to 20 season or not, you don't know what to do come June. If they don't make the decision, then if they're still not made a decision whether to end the season and call it void or continue it later, for businesses, I mean, even with your magazine publication, Dan, there's going to be challenges for all of us now.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to look at the point from the magazine side of it. What do we offer next season? Because people aren't going to have a lot of money. People aren't going to be able to possibly throw away 3 or 4 quid a month to buy a magazine. Is you know, how many are we going to be able to sell? What are the attendances going to be like next season? If people have been made unemployed through the current crisis, can they afford to attend football games? Can they afford to buy a club, you know, their club shirt? Can they afford to go father and son to a game, mother and daughter, family, whatever? This is going to be difficult to keep fans on side next season and to make it affordable for fans. Sponsorship, I mean, we're in a fortunate position that the website's doing quite well, and you know, I'm very much of the thought that, you know what, if we plug through this and continue to show our growth whilst the season is off, there could be a good opportunity that people see that we're consistently meeting targets in terms of our online viewers. And, you know, with the hope that there might be some sponsorship there next season or advertising. But it's going to be very difficult. I think next season is, I mean, I must admit, the legacy of the World Cup last year didn't really cotton on in England.
Well, you said that in the interview we released on Tuesday night, that there hasn't really been a bounce from the World Cup then.
Oh, absolutely not at all. We haven't sold any magazines extra. I know that there's supporters clubs who've struggled and battle to sell their own products, and it's been an uphill battle. You know, we'll only produce what we can sell, but we'll have to think about what we can physically sell next season. You know, it's going to be a challenge, but I don't see the women's game. I mean, we started this year thinking, you know, we've done okay at the World Cup, Barclays have come in, and you know, it's a good time for the sport, but you think about the start of next season, say if we do start in August, September time again, what kind of money is going to be going into the game? I fully believe that Barclays will continue to back it, and obviously they've got the contract. But what kind of money is going to get ploughed in? I don't see it being an awful lot whilst, you know, we're effectively falling into a recession again. The stock markets are really plummeting. And everybody's feeling the pinch of it.
I think as well, Dan, I don't know if you agree, for me, as somebody as well as who co-owns a podcast and co-runs a podcast with Ali, as everybody that listens regularly will know, I'm kind of eyeing the Euros, really, as if we do struggle throughout this period, if the Euros is to go ahead and the country is in a fit state to host it, then hopefully we get a boost from that, as I'm sure you are with the magazine.
Yeah, and when you look at that, you almost think, you know, fans are going to have to plan for this as well. It's not just players, it's fans. You only have to look at England's fixtures, and I think they were proposed that one was going to be at Trafford and the next two were going to be the opposite end of the country. It's not, you know, you could have 3 England games in a week at the group stage to start off. If you wanted to go to all 3 games, it's not going to be cheap for accommodation. You know, if you've got a night match at Southampton and you live up in Manchester, for example, you're going to have to stay over. It almost feels like the country financially won't be prepared for 2021. It feels like it could, and you know, if it continues to be held in 2021, will it have an impact on our attendances? given what the country is about to go through, given the financial worry, you know, are fans going to be able to go and watch, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 tournament games dotted around the country? I don't know if we'll be ready for 2021, regardless of the argument over whether 2021 is ready for us.
I mean, even as well, Dan, with in terms of fans for the men's game, if they do, if it does go ahead in 2021, will fans have enough money to come not only from other countries, pay for that, and then pay 80 quid for a ticket? I don't think they will be. So I think UEFA now also have to look at not only when they're going to play the tournament, but how they're going to support fans financially and the teams.
Yeah, I think the UEFA and the FA have got to look really, really carefully at ticketing strategies for the tournament. It can't be, you know, extortionate prices. It's got to be really cheap, really affordable. I just don't see 40 quid a ticket. See, I don't know what they're going to charge. I'd say cap it to 20 quid. I really do. If you want full stadiums, cap it to £20. I think we should maybe have a rethink about kickoff times. I think let's not have those 9 o'clock kickoff times or 8 o'clock kickoff times even on a night. Let's play it a little bit more sociable time. Let's think about 2 or 3 games on a Saturday and Sunday. You know, you maybe could do a lunchtime, maybe 2 in the afternoon, 1 in the evening. The whole planning of it, if it's going to work, if it is 2021, because 2022, maybe we're on a little bit of a recovery. But I feel like the organisation, maybe we've got to think outside of the usual UEFA tournament box to make sure that it's planned uniquely, taking into account everything which the world is going through in 2020.
Okay, then. That is the end of tonight's show. Thanks, Dan, for joining me, and I'm sure we'll have you on for a few more podcasts throughout the coronavirus outbreak.
No problem. Cheers, Reece.